Did you know that the original Final Fantasy creator, Hironobu Sakaguchi, made a spiritual successor to that legendary series called Fantasian for Apple Arcade, and every level in the game is a handmade, physical miniature model? Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a 1 month free trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. This offer is for new subscribers only. $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.
Pixel Sift.
Hello and welcome to Pixel Sift. My name is Jani. Thank you for joining us for another episode. Well, have you ever wondered what it actually takes to make a game? Well, here on Pixel Sift, we speak to developers from all over the world about the challenges, the successes, the lessons about making games. Joining me on this episode is Mitch. Thanks for joining me, Mitch.
Welcome back, Gianni. It's been a while since you've been on one, and it's been a while since we've been on one.
Together. We've been doing lots of solo episodes back and forth, but now we're back together in the one episode. This is episode 166, and joining us to share their game is Soma Putra, who's a co-founder and producer of the Indonesian studio Stairway Games. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
They've just crowdfunded, really smashed the crowdfunding goal for their farming sandbox game, Coral Island.
Yeah, so we're looking forward to learning more about the game and what happens now that you've had such a successful Kickstarter. So let's jump into it.
Hey there, if you're enjoying the show and you want to hear more, subscribe to Pixel Sift on Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Spotify, or listen on pixelsift.com.au. See you there.
So it made a huge debut onto the crowdfunding site Kickstarter, smashing its goal by around 230%. Coral Island by Stairway Games is a new take on the farming simulator. Now, Soma, for people who haven't come across the game before, how would you describe it?
Coral Island is a reimagined farm sim game inspired by classics. Grow crops, nurture animals, and befriend the islanders. You are also given the choice to revitalize the town. Not just the town, but also the surrounding coral reefs.
Is there, I guess, an island and environmental aspect to this story as well? You're talking about having a coral reef and bringing it back up. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, of course, the game is situated in an island. And part of the game mechanic that we add is a diving element. And in the game, you'll be diving. And in that game, you will be... the mechanic is that to clear trash around the diving area, and by doing that, by clearing more levels, you'll be restoring the coral reef. And by cleaning this coral reef, you will end up affecting everyone in the town and people around you, and that's how you and it will also result in a better crop quality.
Now, you've said it's sort of inspired by some of those classic games that we might have played. Can you tell us a little bit about the influences and what you're doing differently with your game?
Yeah, the heavy influences is definitely Harvest Moon and Stardew Valley. From the get-go, we don't want a farm sim game that is too different to the kind of style that we like. And what we're doing differently is that we added this diving element, one. And another thing is we are focusing on making sure the characters are very inclusive. That is, the character are coming from many different ethnicities.
Why is that important to you?
Yeah, this is very simple, actually, right? Because we grew up in, me growing up in Indonesia, and Jeremy, he grew up in Bali. We grew up like Harvest Moon, right? And we also played Stardew Valley. And a lot of the character we see was just, you know, it's very far from us. Like, it doesn't, very few. Like a lot of, like, the characters there are minority. Like, we are the minority. And when we're doing this game, we're like, okay, you know, let's try to make the characters that we can relate to, that look like us, basically.
What was the first step you take when designing a relatable character to yourselves and those around you?
One of the steps I know that we do is we kind of just take inspiration from people around us, actually. Some are some characters are loosely designed from like people she knows. Is that at least that's what I get from her process. Mm-hmm. And because she's a lot of the diversity feel in Coral Island is actually just a normal thing in Indonesia. A lot of people that said, "Oh, okay, the character there's so many person of color," but you know that's the reality here. You know,
how does it feel when you see, say, Western outlets and things talking about the diversity? When, of course, as you just said just there, Indonesia is a very diverse and vibrant and culturally complementary place.
I don't feel bad about it. I mean, it's a very good thing that there is a movement to support more diversity in Western countries as well. Back from back when I was in college in Los Angeles till now, from the news that I read, there's definitely progress on that area. So I mean, it feels good.
So you said, so you mentioned you studied in Los Angeles. Can you tell us a bit about that time of your life and how that prepared you for coming back to make games back in Indonesia?
Right. I went to UCLA studying computer science. I was a frat member actually of an engineering fraternity. When people hear fraternity, right, like all they think about is party, but this is like we live in the same house, right? And then there is this every day we have dinner together, we just cover, and normal conversations are like physics, chemistry, computer science, obviously, you know. But yeah, that was really good times. I feel like they're my family there, even though a lot of time being especially immigrants, right? I mean, is like you can feel people are like there are some people who are distancing, putting distance to you, right? But because we are all engineers, right? That distance kind of are being torn down, right? And we're kind of like a one big family, so that's pretty good. Regarding about how it prepares me for games, I think the biggest influence will be my experience having some of my friend my experience with American culture, and especially seeing people who are gay, for example, right? Like some of my really close friends are actually gay, and that's just perfectly normal. And I think it's helped me a lot. It opens my mind that if I don't have that experience, then I might not understand the point of view of people about what's the word? The word lost me. Yeah, but. Yeah, it's about what it means to be gay and yeah, to empathize with them. Mm-hmm. And actually support them now too, very much, you know, because they're really good people, that's all.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I want to kind of come back to that, talking about those understanding different perspectives and sharing that perspectives in your game. One of the things that I people mentioned to me, or I saw posted online, was there was actually a mother in the game who's actually got stretch marks from having a baby, and that's something that most people don't see at all. Can you tell us a little bit about the inclusion of characters that, like, everyone has a mother, but that's something we don't generally see in video games?
Right, character is Suki, right? And she was deaf. It was not my idea. It was the idea comes from David Lojaya, which is the character designer, right? I mean, like we said, she has a kid, you know, she's a single mother, and when we explore her designs, one of the ones he added was that, right? And then my reaction was the same as everyone, okay? Because I just have a daughter. Well, I have two now, but first time I had one was that's what I noticed, you know, like stretch mark. you know, the battle scars of mothers, you know. And then I'm like, wow, how do you even know this? You don't have a kid, you know. It's like, I do my research so much. I'm like, oh, okay, you know. It's pretty good. And then that's why we go ahead with the design of Suki, actually, yeah.
With the, I guess, the farming sim genre, there seems to be really strong interest in this coming back. You know, we saw Stardew Valley, which has, of course, become such a huge popular hit. The Story of Seasons, the Harvest Moon games are still being made today. Why is it, do you think, that people really like to just build a town and plant crops? What is it that connects with players?
It's relaxing, right? For me personally, I mean, at least for Indonesian, right? Harvest Moon Back to Nature is the game everyone played. Like every single person all of my friends play Harvest Moon Back to Nature. It's like a childhood thing for us. And yeah, maybe there's something so relaxing, yeah, about going back to the town, you know, tending your farm, increasing and making relationship with the town folks, you know. Another interesting thing about this kind of game is that it allows you to play differently. I'll give you an example, like me and Ayuni, the creative director, and Jeremy, actually, each of us plays differently. Like I'm a maxer, no shame. Like it brings me joy to, like, I have a day, I max it until 12 midnight, like with productive activities. Okay, I know it's so weird after a full day of work, but that's how I play, and that's how I enjoy it. You know? Whereas Ayuni is the making things look good kind of player. You know, she wants everything looks perfect, like the decoration are there. I don't care about that, you know. But that's how Ayuni play, and Jeremy was just like, I don't want pressure, man. I just want to do my own thing. You know, so that's the cool thing, and I think why this kind of farming game have such a large audience. Like it covers, like, if you're a serious player, right? Like a maxer, I will imagine. Yeah, you can do that. You know, you wanna get rich in the game in 1 year. Yeah, you can do that. You know, but if you kind of just take it slow, the game doesn't punish you. Mm-hmm. Like, it's up to you how you play.
Can you tell us a little bit more about that? So how do you balance it out so that players can play in whatever style they want? And, you know, don't say, for example, I remember when playing those Harvest Moon games, and I played the Back to Nature on the PlayStation as well. It's one that I used to spend a lot of time playing. You can feel like you run out of time. That's one of the challenges. You try to do as much as you possibly can in one day. But how do you balance it so it doesn't feel like people are running out of time?
Right. Okay. About the time, there is, and this is something that we learned from the community as well. There's a feature that we implemented is called time dilation, which means we will allow you to adjust how fast time moves. The way this goes is that it will increase the in-game minute to be longer. The NPC will still move the same, but time will just be the time beat will just be slower. And this, I think, helps a lot. I listen that there's people that said it's very frustrating, right? But the other side of it is the game doesn't punish you, though. Like, if you miss, like, let's say you do something, you get distracted, talk to an NPC, and ends up being in a quest, so you can't go to the mines today. But I mean, there's always tomorrow, you know. Like, it doesn't. It's not like it's the end of the world. It's the end of the world. Mm-hmm. And the main mechanic, the big thing with the game is not punishing you. It's kind of the anti-survival game, that mechanic, where, like, in survival, it's like you're always hungry, you're always thirsty. Whereas in this game, you know, if you just decided to sleep for the next until next year, you're not gonna run out of money, right? There's no punishment to that.
I love the idea of, like, there's always tomorrow. I like that.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, another thing that we also are frequently requested, but we kind of decided not to go with it, was the rival marriage. There's a lot of players like, hey, we want rival marriage. You know, rival marriage is this thing among farm team players where they want, like, the dateable to have a like after 5 years, they want them to get married as well, you know. And it's one of those things that it feels punishing, because like if I like a person and I'm like, oh, I'm not moving fast enough to with her, you know, there's that pressure. This is kind of one of the reasoning we're like, you know, that's punishment. This kind of game, we kind of want to reduce punishment.
Let's talk a little bit about this crowdfunding campaign. It was very, very successful. You were originally asking for $70,000 US, but it's ended up raising 1.6 million US. That's a lot of interest. That's a lot of excitement. Congratulations. But is it a lot of pressure?
Yes. It's a lot of pressure. Yes. I can share like the story, like when we first passed 70,000, which is our goal, right? Jeremy actually somehow naturally wakes up 5 minutes after we passed funding. It was 2 a.m. in our time, right? For my end, there's a big thunder, like really big. Sounds like a bomb explosion, actually. It's like, bam! And I'm like, okay, what's going on? And then I check my phone and Jeremy's like, we passed! And I'm like, okay. And then I open, and at that time I was just smiling for like probably 30 minutes straight, you know. Like first thing I got, my mom was like, wow, we get funded, like wow. So yeah, but the after that, it's all pressure, you're right. It's I mean, that's actually how I see it. Like this is a lot of this is a lot of money that a lot of people trust us for a game that are still in development, you know. And I don't want to disappoint them. That's maybe the psychological thinking for me. But apart from that, the day-to-day operation is also like quite stressful, because we were moving so fast. I was like, have you prepared the post yet? Have you prepared the post yet? And then it's like, yeah, I prepared the post yet. You know, and then it's like, for a month, it was like, every day we were always worrying, like we don't want to be, it feels so disrespectful to the players if like we're too late in posting the updates, you know. Like our ideal case is that we passed a stretch goal 5 minutes in post, you know. That's kind of what we want to aim for. So yeah, that's the, and last thing is really the pressure is that seeing people quoting what you wrote, like everywhere. Like I see on Discord people asking something and they screenshot my answer and put it there. I'm like, oh, okay, what if I said the wrong thing?
I can imagine that must be a really like interesting experience to have, because you know, I as you said, it's past your wildest dreams, the crowdfunding goal. It was way more than what you expected. You're excited when you hit your goal of 70,000. You've got a plan, a lot of stretch goals in order to develop this game now, including things like multiplayer, an end game where you can move between different islands and things like that. Can you tell me what does it mean for you as a producer planning out all these extra stages for the game?
Yeah, it means double the amount of people I have to schedule. That's for one thing. I'm also in charge of recruiting, so I've been lately it's been like, let's go join us, you know. That is not always a bad thing as a producer and people in charge of scheduling. Now we are capable of hiring some people that we previously could not afford, and it's always great to work with very talented people. That's probably the biggest blessing of this. And it's and last thing that's really scary as a producer, because I'm in charge of scheduling, is that if we're late, there's that 36,000 people. Like I'm disappointing people, that many people. It's scary.
Can you tell me a little bit more about how the game is actually going to be built over the next little while? Is it something that you plan to release the content in stages? It's sort of like an early access, as some of the other crowdfunded farming sim games have done? Or do you plan to try and get as much of it together in one go and release it all as a final package?
So our stages are alpha demo, which is coming in a few months. Alpha is meant to be an kind of a small amount of people giving a response. This is like our earliest prototype in a sense. It should be quite complete. Like we are aiming as much as we can to, like, for example, there's no gray boxes. Okay, it's just too unprofessional. Like gray boxes is like very unfinished assets. Like, yeah, there's that. And next is EA, right? EA is early access. Early access should have everything, like the gameplay and everything, but the content. The content will be released in stages after between EA and to 1.0. Yeah, we're aiming for at least once every 2 months release for content. We'll see if we can do a faster release cycle. Yeah, so that's kind of the high level schedules on how we will release content for Coral Island.
You talked a little bit about expanding your team. How many people will be working on this game?
Right. I think if I'm not miscalculating, we were 21 person, and now we'll be 35. Yeah, we'll be like 35 people.
Are those people all local, or will they be working remotely around the world?
We prioritize local talent for sure, because we're an Indonesian company. Some are in like in Russia, you know, and this person in Poland as well. There's a few that are from around the world, but we will prioritize Indonesian talent first, definitely.
Can you tell us a little bit more about what the Indonesian game development scene is like? What is the industry like in Indonesia?
There's a lot of unity. I mean, this is I'm talking about programming side first, because that's kind of my forte. There's a lot of Unity programmers. Oh my God, like you every studio are doing Unity. There's no one that does Unreal. And the only way for us is we actually hire Unity programmers and train them. Like, it's just the cost we have to do. That's for the programming side. For 3D though, it's amazing. Oh my goodness. I can't say this because they're NDA, but like some of our team members work on like AAA games that you see on PlayStations. Like, they make models of like one of the iconic thing. But the way it works is that it's the studio in USA outsource it to a studio in Malaysia that outsource it again to a studio in Indonesia where they work. That's the level of what do you call that? Like, delegation, you know, it's very far, but they're the talent, you know. It's just that in Indonesia, either you work in either outsourcing studio is very big. With 3D, there's a lot of talent, very talented people in Indonesia that are in Malaysia right now, and they're working because simply the pay is better. That's the biggest thing. Our hope is that we want to eventually, this game and next game, we want to bring them home, you know, bring them home. Like why are you working in Malaysia? Like, go back to Indonesia. That's for 3D. And let's see, for art, character artists are not too many, but there are enough of people who are quite talented in what they do. And in producing concept arts. Yeah, that's the game industry in Indonesia, I think. But the few that's for the talent. For the few, though, the few of game industry in Indonesia is terrible. Like, we have some people who are like, my mom think I should be doing other things. like it's still few. Like, maybe in the US, right? Like, if you're making a game, people are like, wow, you're so cool, you know? Whereas in Indonesia, if people said, you're making a game, parents were like, what are you doing with your life? Like, join a real profitable industry, you know? So that's the vision that we hope.
Are you hoping that maybe you might be able to go to your parents and maybe the parents of other staff members working on this game and say, hey, look, we've got something that people really love, that people are really excited about, and the Indonesian game scene is something you should pay attention to? Or is that too hard?
I hope so. I actually saw and I feel when during the Kickstarter that the team are very proud of our achievement as well, you know. So I think it should be it shows, right? People say, hey, you know, games can succeed, you know.
I wanted to ask as well. We had an example where someone actually took Coral Island and posted it onto Indiegogo without your permission. They just did it as a bit of a scam. How did that feel? Can you tell us a little bit more about what happened there?
A community members mentioned us. Apparently, one of the members would just back the Indiegogo campaign. What I feel was just like, I mean, what? You know, that's just kind of what I my initial reaction, right? Another side was we are setting up the pre-order page, and we are actually was like, let's do it slow, let's do it right, you know, release it Monday when we're all ready. And then that happened on Friday night, and then it was like, all right, screw it, we're gonna launch this pre-order page before more people get scammed. We reach out to Indiegogo saying, hey, you know, this is not us. You know, I commented on the page too. I was like, please take it down, you know. But the page has been taken down. But we cannot get the data of the person who do this. Like, Indiegogo is not willing to give us the information. And I guess at that point, there's nothing we can do. I also think, how is it so easy for a person to just put a logo in, right, and make a campaign? Like, you know, there should be a more strict verification process, you know, I think.
How do you feel about the level of outsourcing that a lot of Western production companies, game developers, and animation, how do you feel about the level of outsourcing they do in Asia?
Without a place to work and improve their craft, then the artists cannot grow too, right? So yeah, with all these positions opening, be it for outsourcing, definitely will improve. I don't see the outsourcing as being a bad thing too. Like it's actually very good, you know, having all these places that positions open up. For example, without all this outsourcing, I think a lot of Indonesian artists just have no way to make a living from their talent, you know, and are forced to pursue other career path, right, to make a living.
So what's next for Coral Island? What can players look forward to?
We'll improve a lot of areas. Like, you can expect better 3D models, definitely. More complete content that even when we originally planned. We will release 1.0, right? And our this is not an extra thing. I mean, we have planned this before Kickstarter 2. The goal is to keep releasing free updates for at least 3 years for the game. Like after 1.0 is done, we're gonna keep releasing free updates for the next 3 years. And yeah, that's there will be feature handiworks or of course multiplayer, right? Modding support, porting to a different platform. I'm still working on the making sure it's cross platform. That is very frequently requested. I am in the middle of it. The chances are getting higher, but I don't want to say we can promise you, you know, but that's really one of my personal goals is to make sure it's cross, at least cross play, if possible, cross multiplayer platform.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a very exciting prospect for a lot of us here at the Pixel Sift team. We were excited to see a game like Coral Island being made. Summer, thank you so much for spending some time with us and talking to us about the game. We can't wait to see more.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been fun.
If you want to find out a bit more about Coral Island, you can go to stairwaygames.com. You can also if you missed out on the Kickstarter campaign, you can go to BackerKit. If you just type in Coral Island Kickstarter, there's a link up the top where you can still back the game and get involved in it there. This has been episode 166 of Pixel Sift. Mitch, thanks for joining me. I appreciate you coming on and having a chat.
Thank you for having me.
Pixel Sift is produced by Scott Quigg, Sarah Ireland, myself, Mitch Lowe, Daniel Ang, and Adam Christou. And as always, we'll be putting links to everything we talked about in the show notes on our website.
You can also come and join us on Discord. We'd love to have you there. That's pixelsift.com.au/Discord, where you can share your creative work, talk about topics and games, and anything else. That's pixelsift.com.au/Discord. And if you like what we do, can we ask a favor? We are in need of your help to share the show. So tell a friend, subscribe your brothers and sisters, and start someone's journey into podcasts, because we know that getting started is tricky, but once you're in, you'll love it too much to leave.
Our next episode will be coming up in your podcast feed, so give us a follow on whatever you like to listen on, or you can follow us on YouTube as well, or head to our website. But each week we also play games on Pixel Sift Plays, where we'll be checking out some indie games made from Australia, Southeast Asia, all around the world. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you again next time. Until next time, have fun.
If you're in the market for a super addictive puzzle game, you have to check out Mini Motorways on Apple Arcade. It's a city planning strategy puzzler with an incredibly satisfying gameplay loop. Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a free 1 month trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. New subscribers only, $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.